Being sick is the pits. I should know, because I'm sick right now. You can probably hear it in my disgusting nasally voice, and I probably shouldn't be recording a YouTube video right now. But you know what? Life stops for no one, and I'm not gonna get left behind. But for real, I was like, I need to get started on the next video, but my voice sounds like I drowned in cheese graters. Whatever. Let's talk about being sick. It's relevant enough. I'm fortunate to have a really good immune system. I never get sick. Believe it or not. From elementary school through high school, guess how many days I've missed from being sick? Don't guess. I'm gonna tell you anyway. It's 2. And they were back to back, so I was just really dying that one time. I mean, sure, I've gotten sick here and there, and my mom was just like, oh, you're fine. Pack your bag. You're going to school. Missing arm? If the lizards can regrow their limbs, so can you. So that number doesn't tell everything, but I think 2 is a pretty good score to have over 12 years. I'm not like a crazy germaphobe, though. I don't go out of my way to avoid being exposed to sickness or actively try to kill any bacteria that may give me some sniffles. Sometimes I forget to wash my hands. I heard that kids who are more exposed to germs and stuff when they were young were able to more efficiently build immunities to them. So maybe as a kid I just ate a lot of dirt. But even though being sick makes you want to just give up on everything because your eyes are red and your head hurts and you're tired all the time but you can't sleep because your nose is plugged and you can't breathe and everything is agony and life is pain and nothing is worth it in the end, there's some pros that can come from it. Like, you don't have to share anything. Because no one wants to share anything with your disgusting diseased self. Do you have a pencil I can borrow? I've got a cold. Never mind. Can I have some of your food? I have the flu. Keep it. Do you want to hang out? I'm sick. Oh, no, it's okay. We can just...
Sick of your bullcrap! Ah!
Being sick is the best excuse to be a bad member of society and get sympathy for it. Any other time, if you were to sleep in till 12 and then stay in bed all day on the computer, people would just think you're really lazy and have no motivation. But if you just say, oh, I was sick, all of a sudden, oh, you poor thing, get better soon, can I get you anything? Oh, you're such a trooper. It's great. Also, you have the power to claim anything you touch. To each their own, but I also use being sick as an excuse to not talk to anyone because I'm a pathetic shy blob. Good job, immune system. You have failed me. Once as a kid, my brother got pink eye and my family pretty much barricaded him in his room and didn't let him touch anything. It's funny how as soon as someone gets sick, everyone is empathetic towards them, but also kind of treats them like an unpredictable rabid animal. All right, you just stay right there. Don't go anywhere. I got you some soup. Ah, stay over there. I'll push the bowl to you with this stick. Feel better soon. I think the worst thing I had growing up was a few migraines here and there. The first time I had a migraine was in sixth grade. I was sitting in class and all of a sudden my eyes started not working. Like, I would look in one direction and I couldn't see anything in my peripheral vision. It was all gray and foggy. And at first I was like, whoa, this is weird. So this is what blind people see. And I was kind of fascinated by it. Then all of a sudden it felt like my brain exploded. I got to go home early. But I don't count that as a sick day because I was at school for the majority of it. If you've never had a migraine, take a moment to just appreciate that. Because they're one of the worst things ever. I mean, there's worse, but they were up there. I haven't even had any really bad injuries either. The only serious injury I've had was when I was 9. I'm saying serious because I had to go to the ER, but it's really not that bad. For my birthday one year, my parents got me Heelys. Do you remember those? The shoes with the wheel in them? I didn't specifically ask for them, but after a few months, I decided to start trying them out. I'd roll around in the house up and down the halls, and it was pretty fun. Then one time, I decided to take them out on the streets. Our neighborhood was on a slant, so there was a bit of a steep angle to the cul-de-sac, and I was like, this is a good idea. Foreshadowing, it very wasn't. I started going down the road and picking up speed, and like two-thirds of the way down, the tiniest little pebble was like, hey there, friend! And clogged the wheel and threw me forward. I hit my head on the road and opened a huge gash in my chin. My mom was outside talking to our neighbor, so she saw the whole thing and was like, okay, well, I'll talk to you later, Wendy. We're gonna waltz on over to the hospital now. My adrenaline was still pumping super hard, so I didn't feel a thing, and I was like, no, Mom, I'm fine. It's not that bad. I'm okay. But she was like, no, we're going to the hospital. I had to hold a towel over my chin to keep from bleeding all over the car. She didn't let me see the damage at the time, but I asked her about it a bit ago, and she said she didn't want me to see the cut because even she was freaked out about it. This description isn't for the squeamish, but she described it as, like, another mouth I gashed out of my head. Hey, friend, sorry about all this. Okay, yeah, it's probably for the best you didn't let me see that. So I went to the hospital and ended up getting 3 stitches in my chin. When I was waiting for the doctor, a doctor from another room walked in to get some water and was like, "What are you in for?" She hit her chin on the road. Oh, yeah, I've been there before. And he showed us a scar in his chin. And then another doctor overheard from the other room and was like, "Yep, same story." And he had a scar on his chin. So that was a nice human bonding experience. I didn't know so many doctors had Heelys. When I went to school the next day, I had a bandage on my stitches, and all of my 2 friends were like, "Whoa, what happened?" I hit my chin on the road. Whoa! And I felt really cool, and it made me want to, like, break my arm or something to be even cooler.
Genshin Impact needs no introduction. It's taken the gaming sphere by storm since being published in 2020, is enjoyed by millions of players all over the globe, and even if you've never played Genshin Impact before, you've definitely heard about it. Up until this video, I was in the heard about it but didn't know anything about it category. Not for any particular reason, I kinda just don't do anything ever. I don't know why, I should probably figure that out, it might be a therapy thing. As I was sitting on the floor, barely existing one day, Genshin Impact themselves suddenly reached out. "Hi, Jaden. I see you're up to your usual nothingness. How about we pay you to play Genshin Impact?" Okay, so yep, this video is surprisingly sponsored by Genshin Impact. My first sponsor on this channel. Wow. Are you proud of me, parents? No, please don't go. I'm being paid to play Genshin Impact, but it's still gonna be a good video and experience. Here, watch, I'll prove it. I'm talking to Paimon, my spirit companion that I see all over my Twitter feed, about my past. Yeah, I was literally just minding my business traveling from world to world with my sister, when all of a sudden some sustainer of heavenly principles goddess appeared, absorbed my sister with cubes, and chained me to this land. Biggest hater I've ever seen. Yeah, that's crazy. Anyway, thanks for saving me from drowning in the ocean. As we walk and talk, a bunch of little critters are scurrying around. Of course, I was scooping up all of them. The ecosystem was definitely starting to crumble with me on this planet now, I'll tell you that much. Let nature flourish? Nah, it's all going into my inventory. To live is to hoard. As I'm chasing a squirrel around the lush forest, we discover a mysterious statue in the middle of a glistening pond. Oh, hello, great wind god. Maybe this isn't the time to have 12 lizards stuffed in my pockets. I'm suddenly granted mystical powers by the statue, and can now see the map. The city of Mondstadt is close by, so we decided to head over there to see if anyone knows anything about my lost sister. But while walking, we ended up stumbling into a strange bard talking to a dragon. That's not my sister. Unfortunately for everyone, I have a little magic hiccup, which gets us caught, and both the bard and dragon scatter. Closer to Mondstadt, we run into Amber, a knight who warns us that a dragon called Storm Terror, an awesome name, has been terrorizing the town lately. She then joins our party to lead us to safety, which is crazy because I thought you had to spend money to get girls to join your party in this game, but this one just joined us for free. In Mondstadt, Amber then gives us a wind glider. Woo! Flying! I take a running leap off the side of a building to try out my new wings when suddenly the dragon shows up and spawns a bunch of tornadoes all over the town, catapulting me into the air. With a full view of the dragon, I do what any sane person would in that scenario. Storm Terror ends up fleeing, and as a reward for shooing him off, I'm introduced to basically the protectors of Mondstadt. I'm Jean, the acting Grand Master of the Knights of Favonius. Kaya. Very impressive going up against a dragon. You're hot. They take me to various temples, crushing these dragon's breath crystals that apparently gave Storm Terror power. I was just happy to be smashing rocks, though, and some random moth guy that probably has significance but he's dead now, so. As the group was talking amongst each other about important stuff like what to do next to ensure the safety of the townspeople, I wandered off and kind of started doing my own thing. Helped some people, did some cooking, fought for my life against some hyper-aggressive and pissed animal hypostasis Rubik's Cube boss named Beth I accidentally stumbled into, which definitely didn't take me way too long to defeat. Fed some ducks. I then found the bard from earlier doing a guitar solo for the town. He introduces himself as Venti and tells about how him and Storm Terror, whose real name is Dvalin, used to be friendly before it was attacked and poisoned by another dragon, leaving him bitter and angry. Venti essentially says, "I can fix him. Do you want to commit a burglary with me?" "Yes." With a freshly stolen holy lyre, we were able to summon Dvalin, who pulled a bit of a tsundere and was like, if you really cared about me, then you'd come to my castle. But you probably won't because you hate me, don't you? You hate me and want me dead. I just can't do anything right. No! Dvalin, come back! Listen to this sick riff I made. Bada bing, bada boom, we entered his lair and started fighting him in a swirling vortex. No, no, take your time. The dragon eventually falls, we purify him, and the day is saved. Yippee! Happy dragon, happy monstat, happy... Wait, I was supposed to find my sister, not fight a dragon. Even though I'm riding the high of saving all these people and a dragon and being awesome, I head off to Fontaine to continue my journey. The town sits on the edge of a cliff, sparkling waterfalls pouring off the sides around it, framed perfectly by the mountains behind. Wow, what a beautiful town. Is that girl about to jump off the cliff? The water will rise and eventually drown everyone here, leaving our Hydro Archon to sit weeping on her throne for all eternity. Hi, twin sister! Oh, sorry, did I interrupt you talking about the prophecy where everyone in Fontaine is born within sin and one day we will all dissolve in the waters? That's a classic. Come see our magic show. The magic twins, Linny and Lynette, decide to take us to the opera house. But on the way there, we're actually stopped by the Hydro Archon herself, Farina. Welcome, travelers, to my city of Fontaine. Everyone, give them a warm welcome. They're fierce and noble warriors who have done much good for the land and its people. Hey, thanks. It's really nothing. We just tamed a giant dragon. Actually, I hereby declare the traveler under arrest for having a flying object, which is illegal. What? She's not even... Paimon doesn't count because she's a balloon. Yeah, Paimon's my balloon. Ha! All right, that's funny. Case dismissed. Later. So, can we ride the Aquabus? Yippee! We get to the opera house and the magic show begins. Everything is going well, but as Linny was about to do a trick where he swaps boxes with a random audience member, a giant water tank falls onto the box, obliterating it. Oh my god, we killed my assistant Cowell? Why is he here and not the audience member? Speaking of which, where is she? A murder mystery plus disappearance case was now in place, with everyone looking at Linny as the prime suspect. Dude, this is getting good. A man died. Everyone starts trying to be a hero and chime in on the court case where some guy died in quite possibly one of the most Looney Tune ways possible. But I can't really be bothered at this point and go outside to jump into the ocean. Using my new diving skills, I was able to explore the whole world the water had to offer. I was actually shocked when I first saw it because of how gorgeous it was. I don't know why the people of Fontaine are scared of these waters. It's awesome down here. It's because they die. After just swimming around and finding little secrets and treasures, I decided it was time to start fighting the fish. Yep, it was time to square up. Fish have had it too good for too long. Hold this uppercut. Eventually, everyone yanked me out of the water and dragged me back to the opera house to act as Linny's defense lawyer, even though I have no credentials and literally saw him squash a guy with a fish tank. Linny couldn't have killed Cowell because... Cowell killed Cowell! Dude, she's right! What?! Everyone is freaking out at this point because somehow Cowell actually was the murderer and had a secret plan to dissolve people in water. I don't know, it was a lot of adults talking in big words. I was just thinking about punching fish the whole time. Next thing I know, people are shaking my hand and congratulating me on a case closed. Even Farina is like, excellent job, Jaden. You're a funny one. Thank you, Farina. Even though you've been trying to take me to court and put me in jail for your own entertainment, you're also a funny one. I hope your people don't drown. With that, the trial is adjourned and I'm released from my forced upon lawyer duties, left to finally explore the world to my heart's content. There's so many more quests and stories to uncover in the game, also a lot of lore, so if you're a big theory head, proceed at your own risk. I enjoyed the time I spent playing Genshin Impact and was surprised at how beautiful the visuals and music are. It's overall just a well-developed game that's pretty to look at. I got immersed in the world and spent hours exploring to find little secrets and bosses and treasures. Thank you again to Genshin Impact for reaching out and sponsoring this video because I had a great time learning about the universe you all created. If you're interested in playing the open world action RPG game that is Genshin Impact yourself, then ladies and gentlemen, if you would please look under your seats, you'll find
Sorry, not your seat. I meant to say the description of this video. If you look in the description, you can click the link to download it for free. Yep, I said it already, but I'm saying it again. Genshin Impact is free to download. You can have zero money in your bank account and still get to play it. As long as you have at least a PC, mobile device, PS4, and/or PS5 to play the game on in the first place. In battle, you control elements like Kairo, Dendro, Pyro, Hydro, Anemo, Electro, Geo, and when combined strategically, you can deal devastating elemental damage to your opponent. By the way, if you think you've spoiled the game's story for yourself by watching this video, you've never been more wrong in your life. There's so many more towns, quests, stories. Don't worry, trust me, there's plenty left for you to explore. As someone that wants to 100% the games I play as much as possible, I feared for my mind, body, and soul when I realized how much content there was waiting for me. Genshin Impact actually just released a new 4.2 update that includes new characters and even an entirely new storyline for Fontaine. There's a bunch of new events that let you play different kinds of minigames to win rewards. You got to meet her a little bit in the video already, but Farina is a huge new character in this update as you continue the next part of the Archon stories. Fontaine as a whole is also expanding by introducing new environments, boss ascension materials, and local specialties for Farina. It's an ever-changing and growing game that has a lot of passion put into it, and if any of this sounds up your alley, why not give it a try? I mean, the link's right there. Might as well just click it.
Do you ever think to yourself, man, why is it so hard for me to just do the things I need to do and focus and remember things and manage my time and be organized and remember things and not get sidetracked? Ha! Yeah, me neither. When I was a kid, I was pretty much the picture-perfect depiction of a good student. I was well-organized, always turned in my work on time, got good grades. I even did my homework on Fridays instead of procrastinating until Sunday night. Sure, I didn't like studying and found it hard to focus during it, but who didn't? Seeing all those qualities put together, that doesn't sound like the brain of someone with any kind of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, does it? I was well-behaved, didn't feel like I struggled much in school, and didn't cause any trouble. That is, up until I moved out of my parents' house for the first time to go to college. Gradually, I started slipping. I began skipping classes a bit when I just didn't feel like going, would wait until the last moment to start classwork, and lost a lot of motivation because I wasn't interested in any of my schoolwork. But overall, even though it was pretty out of character for me, I chalked it all up to the fact I was simply over going to school. At the same time, my YouTube was really kicking off, and all I wanted to do was that. Of course I wasn't gonna be as good of a student when the silly YouTube videos were doing numbers. I finished a single year of college and convinced my parents to let me take a gap year to see where this YouTube thing can take me. Spoiler alert, the gap year turned into me never going back. I'm a college dropout. So great, I've eliminated the boring school part of my life that weighs me down. Now I can go back to being organized with my new exciting passion job, which entails being my own boss and having to manage and assign myself all of my own responsibilities 24/7. Why are the voices not getting quieter? It's almost like everything was going backwards. I was having a much harder time staying organized and focused. If I didn't want to do a certain type of work, I would have to shackle myself down in basically an isolation chamber to be able to get it done. If I found a new interest, it was all I could think about. And why is it so easy to suddenly be on your roof watching a YouTube video on how to know when you need new shingles? I really didn't get it. Child me had it held together more than current me. What went wrong? I could look back and recognize how everything used to be so perfect and easy. Look at tiny Jaden and all her ducks in that row. I used to color code every single binder I owned, and now I don't even know where I placed the 20 bucks I literally just had in my hand 3 minutes ago. I haven't even left the room. Genuinely, where could it fucking go? Despite feeling like I was downward spiraling for multiple years, I never suspected it could be something related to a genetic neurodevelopmental disorder. I just thought I wasn't trying hard enough and being lazy, or applying myself like I used to. Oh, the woes of turning into an adult, I suppose. Maybe the best years of your life truly are in high school. How upsetting, I didn't even enjoy those either. But then one day I got a text from my brother. I got diagnosed with ADHD. Huh. It was was a pretty big surprise for me because growing up, he never really seemed to show any of the typical symptoms you associate with ADHD. You know, people would always describe ADHD to me as super hyper kids who would run around the room and scream and generally be a lot. That wasn't my brother. He was quiet and well behaved like I was. But when he started explaining his symptoms, the gears started turning. Yeah, I've always struggled a lot with focusing in school and having things hold my attention when it's boring. But like, I could hyperfixate on things I'm interested in and get really passionate about that stuff. Hearing him talk about his personal symptoms of ADHD made a lot of sense, and I felt very freshly educated on the topic. And you'd think that I would immediately start looking into getting a diagnosis for myself, because if you were paying attention, my brother's experiences all sounded very similar to the same struggles I've been having in my own life, but related to work instead of school, because I dropped out. But nope, I was just like, good for you, bro. Happy for you. Or, I'm sorry, I don't know. Anyway, back to struggling to simply open up my drawing program as if two blocks of iron were welded to my wrists. Imbalance of brain chemicals? Nah, this just happens from time to time. It's normal. Just the laziness kicking in. I hate Mondays, am I right? Even though I didn't instantly think there was a possibility of me also having ADHD, the mental seed was planted. It's genetic, so I knew subconsciously it ran in the bloodline. It took a few years after my brother was diagnosed for me to really sit down with myself and consider that I, too, could have ADHD. Shocking revelation, I know. Foreshadowing, where did you come from? Things in the focus and productivity department were just getting worse and worse. I had the attention span of a cartoon dog, would completely forget things as soon as they entered my head, would hyperfixate on random stuff like an addict, and there was constant civil war happening inside my head to get one thing done, even though I knew it would only take like 15 minutes. You don't understand. It feels like physical torture to make myself sit down and lip-sync a simple scene, like, most of the time. You know, the thing I've been doing for 10 years at this point and am definitely used to doing. And yeah, once I've gotten going, then I'm honed in and you have to pry me away from it with a crowbar. I'm aware of that part. But nah, I'm still gonna scrap with myself to plant my ass in that chair because I don't even know why at this point. The biggest thing holding me back from feeling like I had ADHD has always been the simple memory of being in school and having my shit together. I know what it feels like to be on top of things and to be organized. I had it all in the palm of my little child hand. I just needed to summon it again with a bit more effort. But a light switched off in my brain and suddenly I'm just not capable of the things I used to be, and it feels pathetic. Simple tasks are such a mental burden. It feels like I'm out of control but can't do anything about it. So finally, I figured I would try and get myself diagnosed. What did I have to lose? If anything, they just tell me, no, you don't have ADHD. Try a little harder and stop complaining. And yes, of course it took me like 8 months after deciding to get diagnosed to schedule the actual appointment. What did you expect? That's like the first checkmark box on the ADHD list. I started seeing a psychologist and he would ask the typical, do you have a hard time focusing? And I'd go, yeah. Like this one time yesterday, and then he writes something down as I continue rambling on this hyper-specific example way too long for a neurotypical person. I met with him for a few weeks, and then it came down to diagnosis day. The nerves, man. I was so ready for him to say I'm a normal person who needs to suck it up. But instead, he was like, okay, so yeah, you definitely exhibit symptoms of someone with the inattentive type of ADHD. And autism. Yippee! My struggles are justified! I'm not crazy. Wait, what was that last part? He explained all the different ways ADHD affects me and the different areas I struggle with compared to others. He even gave me a 37-page document of his conclusions and information on how my brain works, with graphs and pictures. I've read through it all a bunch of times now, and it's already really helped me understand how I tick. I call them the autism docs, but I'm not gonna get into that side of the diagnosis. Let's just...
let's just brush that one away for now.
There's a couple types of ADHD you can have. Hyperactive, inattentive, and combined, which is both hyperactive and inattentive. Hyperactive is the type people typically go to when they think of a loud kid who can't sit still. People with this kind normally need to fidget, have low patience, tend to talk a lot, and have trouble staying seated, especially when they're expected to, like in a meeting or school. Inattentive is the one where someone experiences difficulty in focus, memory, organization, has a low attention span. That's the one I have. It's self-explanatory, but if you have the combined type of ADHD, then you got it all. ADHD jackpot right there, my friend. I brought up during the appointments that I used to be such a good kid in school with seemingly zero ADHD symptoms, and how that part has always confused me. And he had a couple hypotheses about it. One, since my mom has always been a big source of my organizational influence, I was able to depend and lean on her for the majority of my school life for it. I felt like I was naturally capable of staying on top of things because she was right behind me the whole time, reminding me and guiding me through stuff. So when I moved out, everything started crumbling, which lines up pretty perfectly to when I did start struggling. Another explanation he gave was the fact that ADHD affects women differently than men, which is also less researched. Love to hear that one. Not only do women tend to be able to mask their symptoms better than guys, so it goes much more unnoticed, but they also experience ADHD differently. And research says there's a chance it can just start affecting women later in life. I'm no ADHD scientist, though. That's just what I've been told by specialists. I don't know. I've just got the dang thing. Either way, those two explanations make a lot of sense to me and have since put my weird ADHD imposter syndrome to rest. I didn't really think that getting a diagnosis would change much about how I go about my life, but since getting my ADHD certificate and lollipop, it's completely revolutionized how I think and go about getting things done. It's still hard to get my ass into gear when I need to do one normal thing that's not difficult, but I'm much less hard on myself and will strike almost like these kinds of mental deals to loophole myself into getting things done. Like, for example, if I really don't want to edit a video, I'll say to myself, okay, I know it's gonna be super hard for me to immediately start that task, so I'll get myself into the mindset of getting things done by doing a simple other task I don't find difficult, like cleaning my room. That way, I'll feel productive and can transition that into tackling the original task much easier. It doesn't always work, but it's the mindset change and overall understanding that sometimes I'm gonna have to go about things in different ways that's helped me a lot. Also, after being diagnosed with ADHD, I didn't have much desire to get medicated. I figured just knowing I have it would be enough to get things into gear, and I didn't really need medication that badly. But the content creator in me also thought, well, if I'm gonna write a script about having ADHD, it would be nice to be able to talk about what it's like to be medicated, even just for a day. So I got prescribed good old classic instant release Adderall. Instant release means I don't have to take it every day. I can just take it when I need to get stuff done. It affects me immediately and then wears off after a few hours. There's also extended release, which is the kind you take every day and gives you a constant steady stream of medication. It wasn't until I had the Adderall in my hands when I realized the idea of taking it for the first time made me nervous. Like, what is this thing gonna do to me? I have so many friends with ADHD, honestly a higher ratio than friends without it. That's how it goes in content creation. All these MFs have it. They were all telling me that it's awesome, how you'll take it and immediately feel like a god, and you can do anything, and it's incredible. And yeah, that sounds great, but also like, what the hell? What do you mean I take this little pill and suddenly all of my problems seemingly disappear and I gain superpowers? That's scary. That sounds like the thing every adult in a 20-mile radius warned us about when we were kids. Am I gonna feel like a completely different person? I don't know if I'm ready to experience immortality. I put off taking Adderall for so long because I was irrationally scared of the tiny blue pill, but coincidentally, I really needed to get a script done. If I take too long to write a video script, then the team runs out of work to do, and then I have a bunch of people sitting around and waiting for me to give them more work so they can pay their bills and survive and stuff. But for the freaking life of me, I just could not get myself to sit down and write that script. My body and soul found it mentally easier to backflip off a bridge than write words on the computer. After literally 2 months of my brain going,
Ooh, you better write that script. I won't let you enjoy a single moment of your life if you aren't writing that script. I don't wanna. Get up, go to the bridge. After that constant loop, I finally swallowed my fears and took my first Adderall. I had talked to James a lot about what Adderall is like since he's been on it for a few years now. And after I took one, I was messaging him like, I did it. I ate an Adderall. How long does it normally take to start? How do I know? What do I do? And he was helping me a lot and giving me tips. Then, like 20 minutes later, I felt it. All the non-stop thoughts going on in my brain went silent. I could think clearly and in like a line. My mind wasn't racing a mile a minute. I was able to sit behind my laptop and write. It was incredible. I was messaging all my friends about it the entire time. I can write my script and not get distracted. I don't have to take a mental break every 10 minutes. I can remember things. Kelsey sent me a message and I thought, I'll check that in a bit. And I remembered to check in it a bit. And respond! When I opened a new tab to look something up, I didn't go down a random unrelated rabbit hole. I picked up my phone to check something and didn't impulsively scroll Twitter for an hour. I can write words so easily. How am I doing this? What do you mean I can feel like this whenever I want if I just eat the tiny blue pill? I refuse to believe regular people can function like this on a day-to-day basis. No way. It wouldn't be fair. You guys don't have loud, non-stop voices in your heads preventing you from doing normal things? Come on, just admit it. You can't pick something up and immediately keep remembering what you were supposed to be doing with it. You always forget and feel crazy. Come on. Come on. I was so suspicious that on Adderall, either nothing would happen and I just wouldn't feel anything, or I would feel like I'm a totally different person experiencing some higher than life manic episode. But no, I just felt like myself, but with my shit together. And that's the part I couldn't believe. After 2 months of war, I finally was able to plant myself down and write my damn script. You wanna know what script I wrote while experiencing Adderall for the first time? This one. I was struggling to write a script about ADHD, and the thing that finally pulled it out of me was Adderall. You gotta admit that's funny. Yeah, it was great. I didn't think my head was loud before, or I was that impulsive, or had that hard of a time focusing. But now that I've been able to peacefully sit in one spot for hours and not need to take a break or check social media or get distracted by some stupid tangent I don't actually care about, yeah, this changes things. I still can't believe what I was able to accomplish. Writing a script in 3 hours. Compared to my typical 12 hours. AKA one mediocre thing with no struggle at all. And you wanna know what I did right after I wrote this script? I immediately got up and cleaned the bird's room. Without rotting in bed for 3 hours beforehand. I just went from one task to another. Without thinking about it! All you neurotypical people must be thinking I'm literally pathetic and useless, but I know my ADHD brethren are out of their chairs right now hearing that. I'm not standing before you all to give you scientific data and information on ADHD, or diagnose you, or even promote prescribed drugs. I'm just here to talk about a big and recent experience in my life, how much of an impact and effect it's had on me, and how awesome feeling normal is. Seriously, being able to take a deep breath in mental silence is incredible. Cherish that feeling if you don't have a neurodevelopmental disorder. It took me 26 years to realize my woes were not actually woes, but symptoms of brain chemical deficiency. I'm writing this video, all things considered, pretty recently after being diagnosed, and I'm still trying to learn how to rebuild my life in a way that lets me optimize my productivity and get things done at a normal level. But so far, I've come so much further than I thought I could simply by knowing what's going on up there in the old noodle. And Adderall. If you're on the fence about being diagnosed with something, I get it. It's scary. It's scary to think you might have it, and it's also scary to think you might not have it. It's an odd place to be. But for me, having a concrete answer from a professional is what got me to finally stop feeling stuck in place and actually start moving forward again. It's been great. I'm excited to keep learning more things about how my mind works and find new ways to improve my day-to-day life. Cheers to getting normal shit done. For people who have been around for a while, you might be seeing the title and thinking, Jaden, aren't you allergic to cats? And to that, I'd say, yes. Kind of. I'm actually not sure anymore. And for the people who know anything about me, you might see the title and think, Jaden, cats are literally the number one natural predator to birds. And to that, I also say, yes, that one's 100% proven fact. So let me back up a bit and explain how we got here, because all the cards in the world were stacked against the idea of me getting a cat. Growing up, I was irrefutably and absolutely allergic to cats. My best friend had like three of the things, and every time I would hang out or sleep over at her house, I would be a sneezy, watery-eyed, snotty mess. Can I have some water? Given the fact my brother was also allergic to cats, it was set that we were a dog family. My whole life I went around not giving cats a second thought. I never had anything actually against them, but since I was forced to stay 20 feet away from them or suffer the consequences, I just couldn't get to know them. Plus, as a kid, dogs were always more appealing. They're more likely to be bigger fans of playing and running around, be more approachable with their genetically bred unconditional love, and can overall be more forgiving. Cut to like two catless decades for me later, and I'm meeting Jacob for the first time at his place. As we're hanging out in his living room, his cat Fraser comes over and greets me. Fraser is extremely social and vain, so he's always expecting nothing less than a never-ending stream of attention from the people. Even though he's very cute and distinguished, I deployed my typical foolproof plan of don't touch the cat. Fraser realizes he's not getting any attention out of me and sits down nearby on the couch. But a bit later, Jacob's other cat ends up making an appearance. This one's Taylor. She's normally really shy and hides, but does really like women. Which I am. Taylor ended up crawling onto me and making herself really comfy in my womanly lap. Jacob, knowing I'm allergic, offered to take her away, but this was actually the first time a cat has ever done something like this to me. I've always been a bit of a cat magnet, if you want to call it that, because I act like they don't exist, which they interpret as me not pushing their boundaries and creating a comfortable environment for them to come up to me on their own terms, but never have I felt like a cat has chosen me like this before. I told Jacob I'm happy to let her stay comfortable on me, and I'll just reap the consequences of my sowing later on. This was my first extremely positive experience with the cat, and I honestly felt really happy and special and wanted to enjoy it. A few hours later, I'm saying my goodbyes, and during the drive back home, I realized I was completely fine. No sneezing, no itchy eyes, straight up nothing. I was so confused and curious. Thus, the start of my little cat experiment began. Every time I went over to Jacob's place, I would let the cats be as social as they wanted with me. If Taylor wanted to sit by me, I'd let her. If Fraser wanted attention, I would pet him. At one point, while we were watching a movie, Taylor literally decided to lay down on my neck, filling every one of my breaths with cat dander and hair. And you know what happened? No reaction! Not even a little drip of mucus! Somehow, sometime, I'd grown out of my cat allergy and never noticed. Apparently, every 7 years, people's allergies have the chance to change. Maybe being surrounded by my friends' cats all throughout my childhood could have helped my body get more familiar with them. Either way, I've now unlocked the skill to survive cats. Oh, guys, it was incredible. Now that I'd been freed from my shackles, I immediately started taking time to get to know cats more. Instantly, they felt so much more cute and cool and approachable, and I was really starting to like them more, especially since every time I would hang out at Jacob's place, Taylor would walk over and be around me and purr, and oh, it was amazing to be loved by a cat. So I really like cats now. And after some time, I decided I wanted one too. Jacob and I decided to peruse a local cat rescue's website just to see what cats were available. I don't want to get one right away. There's a lot I have going on, but it doesn't hurt to, oh my god, that one. I want that one so bad. It's so cute. What's its name? Tostada? Tostada! Tostada, my beloved. We have to send in an application. We have to. Hi, my name's Jaden. I love this cat. Please let me adopt it. Please, 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 please. What? You guys know me. I'm weak-willed and impulsive. My first mistake was liking cats to begin with. The rescue reached out a few days later for a cat screening interview to make sure we would be a good fit to be cat parents. After being approved, they told us we could pick any cat we wanted that was in their care. Of course I asked about Tostada, but we were given the unfortunate news that she had already been adopted. We looked at the other cats available on their website, but unfortunately, none of them really stood out to me. The rescue ended up inviting us to a little Meet the Cats event they were hosting where we could see all the cats they had up for adoption in person, which was awesome because that was actually the first time I'd ever actually seen and held a kitten before. It was amazing. But as cute and tiny as they all were, there still wasn't one that called to me. I pried Jacob away from the kittens, headed home, and we started waiting. Every day I would check the rescue's cat list to see if any new ones caught my eye. I didn't even know what I was looking for, but waited for the universe to send me my perfect cat nonetheless. One morning I refreshed the page and saw one new kitten added. A tortie they found in some dumpster named Scrabble, with the biggest eyes and forehead I'd seen in my life. Something about this bizarre little creature called to me. I messaged the rescue about Scrabble, and they told me she's available, putting me in touch with Scrabble's foster parents. Every day, they sent me new little pictures of kitten Scrabble, and every photo I fell more and more in love with her. She seemed so silly and playful and those eyes. We got on a video call and they told me all about how big of a personality she has. Out of the 5 other kittens they were fostering, she was by far their favorite. The whole time we were talking, Scrabble was flipping around in their arms and looking at the camera with her giant orbs. I left that call knowing I found my cat. I needed to have little kitten Scrabble. Meeting her in person only cemented it. She was shy at first, but after flinging around her worm toy, she immediately started hopping around and being the life of the party. I talked a lot to her foster parents, and they just gushed about how they wished they could keep her since they all loved her so much. Even though the rescue called her Scrabble, obviously that was more of a placeholder name, the foster parents called her Cammy, but neither of those really fit to me. However, I knew one name that I liked. Tostada. Yeah, I stole another kitten's name and pasted it on mine. So what? Big deal. Tostada is a great name. My Tostada is way more of a Tostada than the other Tostada anyway. Look at her. I would have left with little Tostada in my arms that moment if I could, but unfortunately, Jacob and I were going out of town for 3 million weeks and had to wait to take her home until after we came back. She was all I could think about the entire time. I was shoving Tostada photos in everyone's face every chance I got. The foster parents were sending Tostada updates every day. I was overflowing with yearning for this cat. She was growing and learning about the world without me. Take me home to my child. Literally, the moment Jacob and I landed, we drove straight from the airport to the foster home to pick her up. I could not wait. We arrived home with plus one Tostada. I couldn't believe it. I have a mammal now. And sorry, other mammal owners, but it's the best mammal in the whole wide universe. Jacob and I spent the entire day playing with her, letting her get used to her new surroundings. She was so cute and so tiny. Here's a video of her eating wet food with a big old chomp. As someone who's owned birds for 7 years at that point, it felt so strange to have a pet that was significantly less fragile. And also draws significantly less blood. You mean this thing can't fly up and get hit by the ceiling fan? Insane! I've had Tostada for a while now. She's 2 years old at the time of me posting this. And let me tell you, this thing has become a creature. First of all, eyes, still giant. And she never blinks. Look at this. She was sitting on my desk looking like that long enough for me to notice, get my phone out of my pocket, pull up the camera app, put the camera in her face, and take a photo. And here's like 4 more. She is also not that smart. I'm sure you could deduce that by how she looks, but this thing has a single brain cell and it's just another version of herself up there with a joystick. Jacob and I are fully convinced she can only form a few thoughts a day and only in single word nouns. Evidently, Tostada is also very scared of everything, always has been. Loud noises, quiet noises, no noises, movement of any kind. Even Jacob, a person she's been around all her little life post dumpster. There's been times where he'll be at his desk, moves his chair just a smidge, and she's darting out of the room. One time we were trying to explain to some friends how skittish she genuinely can be, and demonstrated it by grabbing a toy literally in front of her, raising it up a bit, lightly dropping it on the floor, still in front of her, and she bolted. You know how cats are genetically built to be good at balancing? Well, Tostada can't even do that. She trips and falls and misplaces her feet all the time. time, on multiple occasions, she has tried to walk across my L-shaped desk and just missed and fell down. That's like the one thing that makes a cat, and nope, doesn't hit the mark there either. She's gotten better, but as a kitten, Tostada couldn't even jump. After I built her her first cat tower, I watched as she attempted to jump up to the second level, not quite make it, and had to slam her arms down on the thing to hoist herself up like she was mountain climbing. But oh, is she the sweetest little thing. When I got a cat, I was expecting it to want its own space, come around when it wants, you know, general cat things. But this creature follows me from room to room with those high beams of hers. She sits on my lap while I'm at my computer, lays on my giant Pokemon plushes, mostly just looks up at me from the floor and just stares. When I'm sleeping, she'll just crawl into bed and tuck herself up right next to me. Look at all these photos of her straight up on me when I'm sleeping. Don't look too close though, I don't have makeup on. Bedtime is sacred to her. She loves bedtime. If I'm working late, Tostada will come into my office around 9 or 10 p.m., aka past Tostada bedtime, and just start crying, scratching on my chair, rolling around on the floor. It's pitiful. And if I still don't move after that, she'll go into the bedroom and drag over her string toy she always plays with. It's just so sad and pathetic. I always play string with her when she brings it over though, don't worry. But lately, she's picked up another routine habit, which is pats. Not all cats like the pats, but Tostada lives off them. It's when you just slap a cat's butt and it looks like you're hurting them, but they actually love it. However, Tostada's really particular about pats. First of all, I'm the only one allowed to give her pats. Jacob has tried and she runs away scared and offended every single time. Second, she has to receive pats on a specific spot on the floor of the closet. If I try to give her pats in, like, my office, she bolts to her floor spot, staring at me to continue them over there. Also, she begs to be pat every single night. Like clockwork, she'll sit like a gargoyle in front of the closet and cry pitifully until I come over there. Now, when I finally come over for pats, she'll flop on the floor and start horizontally rock climbing her way across the floor with her claws and tangle herself up in the Ethernet cables while I keep up the pats. You think I'm joking, but I'm very much not. This is the only way she accepts pats, and I have to give them to her every night or else she's miserable. Tostada's world is so small. She's really just around me, Jacob, Taylor, and Frasier, but she loves her simple family so much. When kitten Tostada first met Frasier, she was terrified of him. She'd been around other adult cats before, but she'd never seen a flat cat in her life, and she was mortified. Of course, she's since warmed up to him, and they play together and hang out all the time, and they're best friends, but Tostada loves Taylor. Always has. She looks up to Taylor like a little baby sister admiring her cool, awesome older sibling. Unfortunately, Taylor hates it. They literally have a SpongeBob Squidward type of sibling relationship, and Tostada is so oblivious to it. Taylor has annoyingly swatted at Tostada so many times just for existing around her that Tostada now thinks it's a fun little game they play and will start chasing and swatting back at Taylor happily, not understanding cat social cues. Of course, never in a way that's too far, but just enough to get on Taylor's nerves even more. Between the three of them, they all have such different little personalities and relationships to each other. It's made our lives so much more entertaining. And to anyone concerned about the birds, don't worry. I've got Ari and Tofu very separated from the cats. They're safe in their own blocked-off room connected by a double door system that ensures no possible interaction between bird and cat. If anyone is thinking about getting cats and birds as pets, it is possible, but just make sure the two are very separate, especially if you have smaller birds like conures or budgies. I'm sure there's people out there that have trained their cats to be fine around a pet bird, but to me, all it takes is one accident or attack for you to just not have a bird anymore. Plus, having the two of them takes a huge amount of time and commitment. I've said it before and I'll say it forever. I love my birds to death, but they do not make good pets for the very large majority of people. In terms of allergies, I do think I was originally still a little bit allergic allergic to tostada, ironically. When I first got her, I was sneezy and sniffling. Nothing allergy pills couldn't fix, and it never was as bad as my original cat allergy. But I think I've been growing out of that one too, because nowadays I don't have any reaction to her at all. Bodies are a mystery. I am building my immunity to everything. Next up is rat poison. I didn't think I would make a video talking about this thing, but Tostada's just got such a funny little personality and has become such a big part of my life. She may be the description of autism, but I love her more than the world itself, and I know I'm the center of her little life too. I don't even see her as a cat. She's just a little creature that follows me around looking weird, but I love it, and I'm so glad I grew out of my cat allergy just so I can have her. When it comes to the spirit world, supernatural, chakras, I'm indifferent. Normally, I just don't mess with any of it. Whether it's real or not, I'm sure not gonna fool around and find out. I'm here to live as normal a life I can, die, and then we can go from there. But I got curious. What would happen if I individually booked readings with a bunch of psychics? I mean, I don't even know what they do. I just know something about them being made of crystals and having three eyes or something. It's a world I've never explored before. Until today. I didn't even know what to expect. Would they all say the same thing? Different things? Would they say I'm cursed and demand to put a ritual on me? Who knows? I booked a reading with 5 different psychics. Let's see what they all said about me. I wanted to keep as much consistency in all of this as possible. You know, scientific method and all that. So I specifically booked a tarot card reading and palm reading from all 5 of them. That way they're all reading the same things for me and we get to be good little scientists in the supernatural community. Anyway, psychic 1. I walked into the shop and saw a table with a bunch of candles and crystals on it. You know, the typical psychic stuff. Now, I've never gone to a psychic at this point. I didn't know what they were gonna do to me. Were they gonna say my name and say they've been expecting me? And for all I know, a real life wizard could walk through the door and speak in riddles to me the whole time. But psychic 1 was a 5-foot-tall middle-aged white lady in a black spaghetti strap tank top and a ponytail. All the psychics had a bit of a different method of doing the tarot card reading, but the overall gist is they had me put my right hand over the stack of cards, say my full name, then I pulled 18 cards that would determine my reading. Psychic 1 pulled the cards herself, though. I didn't get to pick them, so I don't know if that was a non-regulation move or all the other psychics let me pick my cards, I'm just saying. She started with what she read about me as a person. I'm my own boss and don't like being told what to do, which is like half true. Well, being my own boss is full true. Hi guys. In normal day-to-day life, I love having someone else tell me what to do. It's just nice to turn my brain off and put someone else behind the wheel. But with YouTube, it's true. I don't like being told what to do. With the Pokemon XD video, I was asking Jacob what I should do with the thumbnail, and he said I shouldn't have Shadow Lugia in it because it's not that eye-catching. And I was like, no, I'm putting Shadow Lugia in the thumbnail because I love Shadow Lugia. And then I did. So the psychic's pretty on point so far. She said I don't like asking people for things. Everything I have, I worked to gain with my own 2 hands. I'm gonna live a long and healthy life beyond my 80s. And I'm gonna have 3 kids. All of those things are pretty fair. I do think you could say that to the majority of people, though. Even if it's not genuinely true to their personality, I think most people like to believe that's the type of person they are. And if I don't live to be 80, what am I gonna do? Sewer? But that's the very strong skeptic in me talking. She do know me for real, for real. Then she asked if I had any questions for her, and I told her that I constantly worry that my birds are gonna die in some freak accident or sudden disease, or they get out and fly away never to be seen again. She pulled more cards and said she sees that they're safe, but would recommend placing a spiritual protection over them. Which was very interesting to hear. From what she explained, I'd be doing a 3-day, 3-night meditation for them to create a spiritual barrier that can protect them physically, mentally, and medically. Promising medical protection is a big deal. You can't just throw that around lightly, might I just say. And to perform the meditation, I would need to buy the materials from her to do it. She was very big on making sure I knew I wasn't paying for her time, just the materials. Which, how thoughtful. until she dropped the materials would cost $427. Let's just do a quick rundown on this whole session so we're all up to speed. During this psychic reading, this lady learned I'm my own boss, am successful enough to run my own animation team, care very deeply about my birds, enough to pay a psychic $90 to ask about their safety, and all I have to do to fully protect them from basically anything and everything in this world is set up this spiritual protection for the low price of $427. I didn't know you could repel cancer for under 500 bucks. Someone distract the government. I think we're onto something here. I just told her I don't have the money for it right now. A lie she most definitely didn't believe at that point, but I had to say something to stop this snowball in its tracks. And immediately she said, "That's fine, but this isn't something you should wait a long time on." Thank you, we'll be in touch. I never went back. For that being my first psychic reading experience, it spawned so many questions, but it did answer one I had beforehand, which was, how do psychics even stay in business? Because I am now starting to understand the business model going on here. Moving on to psychic 2, I'll say this right now, this one was my favorite. She was really nice and we had a lot of good small talk. Her psychic reading room was a little closet in her house, and by the end of the session it was very warm in there, but I had a nice time. Same situation, got a tarot card and palm reading. I think she said she gave me a general spiritual reading as well, and this all cost 90 bucks, just like the last one. What she said was all very positive. She said she sees me making a name for myself in whatever industry I'm in. That was genuinely the first thing she said to me. I didn't tell her about my job or anything. She sees a lot of new and exciting opportunities coming for me in the new year. I got all these readings done late 2022, so by the time this video actually comes out, we get to see if that's true. She also said I'm planned to live a long and healthy life past my 80s, and she foresees me moving to a different location sometime when I'm older, which is most likely true. I don't like LA. It freaks me out. She identified my bad time of the day, which she said is 3 a.m. Again, true. If life gets a bit too hard to handle, I will absolutely have a meltdown in bed at that time. But also, everyone has a meltdown when they're broken and it's late at night. That's a universal bad time. They even wrote a rule in life about it. Nothing good happens after 2 a.m. But it's good to be more aware of because I forget and 3 a.m. hits different some nights. She said, I've always been connected to animals. I'm gonna be a mother of three. Okay, the other psychic did say that. Mental note. And for some reason said I should get into hiking, which just sounds like a nice hobby recommendation. I didn't know tarot cards and palms could say that. I asked her about my birds. I didn't get the spiritual protection from the other psychic, so they are still in jeopardy. And she said although she's reading that they should be safe, if I'm worried about any medical issues, I should just go to the vet and get general checkups done. Which, you know, I respect a lot. I came in asking about the health and safety of my animals and she told me what she read, but if I'm actually concerned, to just go to a doctor. And didn't charge me $427 for it. Overall, Psychic 2 was very nice. She gave me a good reading, didn't try to sell me anything, and reminded me that doctors exist. Psychic 3 was kind of back in the same vein as Psychic 1. She almost immediately said I'm gonna live past my 80s and have 3 kids. Alright. She said she sees me having good financial fortune and good opportunities are coming in the new year, but she also said in August, a man with a beard and or mustache is gonna approach me with a business opportunity and to be wary of him. And then, before I could even process that, she said I may be involved in a light car accident in the next few months, possibly a fender bender. This is the first psychic that was this blunt about straight up predicting things, and by the time this video comes out, those months would have passed already, so I'll add right now if I was in a car accident. She also said someone near me is gonna have a baby and that I'm gonna become very attached to it. And that's gotta be the most incorrect sounding prediction of all the psychics so far because I am not a fan of babies. I don't like them. I think they are weird and unpredictable. I do not care who in my group of family or friends has a baby. I'm staying the hell away from it. She went back to reading me as a person, said I'm very trusting and to be aware of jealous people that are around me. In this industry, that's pretty fair. Then she said it seemed like I had a big purchase on my mind, to which I admitted there was something expensive I saw that I've had my mind on for a while. She asked what it was because she foresaw it being good for me, and I told her about the new giant Altaria plush that Pokemon announced. I don't think that's what she expected though, because she seemed to lose a little focus after that one.
But I did end up buying it.
I asked about my birds, just like I have been for all of them, and she said they seem safe. However, after reading me for so long, she sensed my chakras were imbalanced, which was a shame because I could have sworn they were properly aligned. Anyway, she would like to help with them. I said, sure, and she hit me with the meditation prayer bit and how I'm only paying for the materials and not her time, and they're gonna cost $375. Much cheaper than Psychic One, but man, that's like the same setup and kicker. And no medical protection to boot. I politely declined and left. I gotta say though, this psychic was the first one to straight up tell me, you're gonna be in a car accident. A bearded man is gonna approach you in August. Like, just real life things. Whether or not they come true, you gotta respect that gamble. Definitely an all or nothing type of psychic. She was also the most expensive one yet. The other psychics were both $90, but this one charged me $162 for the readings. Now, Psychic 4 was a doozy, might I tell you. I walked up to her shop door, entered the room, and no one was there. I immediately walked back out because it's weird to be just there alone, and texted her I was here, to which she responded, give me 15 minutes. Kinda strange a psychic is running late, but I'm not here to get into that irony, so I just sat on a little chair and waited outside. 15 minutes passed, then 20, 30, this lady was 40 minutes late to a psychic reading. I brushed it aside because whatever, and we started. She let me pick my tarot cards, laid them out in the formation, and told me she's very surprised I picked a lot of queen cards. Apparently, in the standard tarot card deck of 78 cards, there's 4 queens, and I randomly picked 3 of them. She explained that's no accident. So you heard it here first, people. Certified and indisputable queen over here. The stars said so. She led with how she sees I have a good, strong energy. I work for everything I have. I've got good financial stability. I'm gonna run my own company and be a good leader. But she sees a lot of jealous people around me and to be careful about them. I tried to explain YouTube to her because I felt like that would explain all the things she just said, since all things considered, it's pretty accurate. But after like 5 minutes of trying to explain what a YouTube channel is, she just gave up and was like, sorry, I just don't understand technology. Fair enough. Also, sure, all of what she said was surprisingly accurate, but I'm always wary of what can be used as a blanket statement, especially when it comes to the financial stuff, because I don't know, I think going to psychics is a bit of a luxury expense. Not everyone can afford to pay upwards of $100 just to be told they've got positive vibes and are gonna be in a car accident. But then Psychic 4 said, I don't know how you do it, but you're making at least X per month, and gave me a very specific range of what I actually do make per month. That's what definitely perked my ears up. You know, I don't have a normal job, and even after not understanding how I make money, she was able to drop a number that was pretty close, all things considered. Then she said she sees me living a long and healthy life, and that I'm gonna be a mother of 3. I haven't directly talked about it yet, but I would like to say it's hauntingly strange how literally all 4 psychics have told me I'm gonna be a mother of 3. None of them even asked me if I like kids in the first place, they just straight up told me point blank. I don't know what about me is giving off I'm gonna have 3 kids vibes, but it needs to stop. I absolutely do not want 3 kids. It's too many kids for me to handle. I'm gonna have to figure out how to change the fates, like, immediately, because it's all feeling a bit too real at this point. They also all said I was gonna live a healthy life past my 80s. So if I die at 50, I want all of my money back. Anyway, Psychic 4 kept talking, saying it seemed my birds are safe, because I asked, but there seems to be a negative energy trying to attack them, to which she'll start meditating to protect them. Also, my chakras seem unaligned, and my third eye isn't very developed despite how old my soul is, which sure is a sentence, so she recommended a chakra meditation thing. She had me lay on her table under a lamp of RGB crystals and turned on relaxing spa music. Then she told me to close my eyes, because when your eyes are closed, your third eye opens, and that's why you dream when you sleep. It's your third eye. You learn something new every day. Anyway, I laid there. She gave me some crystals to hold and put more crystals on my chest and stomach and legs and put a bell on my forehead that she would ring every few minutes. After a bit of that, she told me she had to leave the room for 5 minutes so her energy doesn't interfere with mine. But I could swear she left me on that table alone and blindfolded for like 15, maybe more. After she remembered I was still there, she came back, sprayed me with lavender, which was pleasant, did little karate chops on my body, and then had me sit up. I did hit my head on the RGB crystals, so I hope that didn't jostle my chakras. And that was that. She said I had a lot of energy and that I'm an old spirit, but I need to develop my third eye more, and she's gonna send me home with a couple incense to burn, and that I need to come back tomorrow. At this point, I was in too deep. All the other psychics, I was able to squeeze my way out of these situations. But I just ended up doing it this time, mainly because she told me to burn incense, but I didn't have an incense burner, and then she lent me hers, and I didn't want to just take it and dip. So I burnt the incense like she told me to, and went back the next afternoon thinking that was it, and after that I could start not coming back anymore. But then she gave me some crystals, more incense, and bath salts this time, and told me to meditate in the bath while holding the crystals and also burn more incense, which meant I go home with her incense burner again. And that's when my friends told me to stop there and not go back. So I didn't. By the way, she charged me $776. I have no idea how she did that. She said the chakra thing where I lay on the table was like $100 or $200 extra. And then after we were done, she gave me the card reader and it said $650, to which I was just like, sure, whatever. And then my email receipt said $776. Again, I am reminded of how these people actually stay in business. She called me a queen, gave me a crystal nap, and then took $800 from me. And last but not least, Psychic 5. So for her, when I call to book an appointment, she told me she only takes cash and that I have to call 30 minutes before our appointment to confirm. So I did that a few days later when our appointment was scheduled, and she's like, oh, I'll be honest, honey, I completely forgot about you. Can we reschedule to tomorrow? Which is like, first of all, how does a psychic forget? I rescheduled to the next day, but a few hours later she called me back and was like, actually, I overbooked you on top of a different appointment. Can we reschedule to next week? And at this point, I'm annoyed, but again, I'm like, whatever. So we reschedule again. I called to confirm 30 minutes before again, and once again, she forgot. So I just gave up. Tell me how many kids I'm gonna have! And that was my psychic experience. I'm still pretty indifferent about all of it, but I can totally see how and why people can get super into it if they surround themselves with the culture. Whether it's real or I believe it or not, it was surprisingly nice to be told things were gonna be okay. I do think some of them can be a bit predatory on people at their low points, but hey, it's great to have my chakras rebalanced.
Some of you may have heard, but a while back, Jacob and their team created a little something called Pokemon Too Many Types. It's just a normal game of Pokemon Emerald, but you might notice some things are just a little bit different. Everyone has talked about how chaotically fun this game is, and I finally found the time to play it myself. Let me tell you, everyone was right. This was the most insane, backwards, chaotic playthrough of Pokemon I've had in quite some time. Professor Birch is being mauled by a dog in the grass right outside my house for the millionth time, and after digging around in his stuff, I helped myself to a Popplio. But not just any Popplio, for you see, this one is silly. Obviously, I blast the Angiepoochiana to smithereens, and with that, have now earned the freedom to explore the world on my own. Yep, it's dawning on me that I have no idea how anything works anymore. Trainers had all these new Pokemon, they're pulling out moves I've never seen before, types don't line up the way I'm familiar with. It genuinely felt like I was playing Pokemon for the very first time again. Weasel is water fluffy, Snom is ice bean, Machop is fighting stinky. Popplio, give that thing a shower, it reeks. Oh, that's super effective. I suppose that makes a lot of sense. Going into this game, I decided not to look at the type chart at all, which by the way looks like this. I'm gonna have to unfortunately use my brain and logic to figure out how to win every single battle until I'm the champion, which may be a bit trickier than you would even guess. For example, this Impidimp. He has now been turned into a dark gamer Uno reverse type. Naturally. I figured gamer might work similarly to the stinky type and be weak to water. That makes sense, right? Alright, look, I didn't make the game, alright guys? I'm just figuring out the riddles. However,
let's see what gamer has to say against water type. Take a shower. What? It's got... What?
So here's the logic you got to think about. Not only is it a gamer type, it is an Uno reverse gamer type.
Oh.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, as much as I might think I know how things would work, you're going to witness that it doesn't always pan out the way it seems. I scooped myself up a Krabby, which, as you can see, is no longer water type, and entered the Rustboro Forest only to be challenged by a Team Aqua Grunt with a single Snow Runt. I wasn't worried until I realized the hard way that despite its silliness, Popplio still doesn't like grass, and crabs don't mix well with ice. Wiping this early in a Pokemon game is genuinely so humbling. And I don't like it at all. Honestly, I didn't even want to tell you that it happened in the first place, but we run it back because this isn't a Nuzlocke, and my little pets are perfectly healthy after being dunked on. This time, we send the Grunt hightailing it back into the bushes. Despite feeling dumb and stupid and pathetic for wiping to a level 9 Team Aqua Grunt with one Pokemon, I waltzed into the first gym with my chest out like I earned being there. As most of you know, Roxanne is typically a rock-type trainer, but she's now studied the ways of the ancient-type Pokemon, which I didn't think would be much different until she completely steamrolled me.
Oh, shit. I got Doggy, but Doggy isn't gonna do too much here. God damn it. Waste of a turn. No! Well,
her Lileaf is crazy. Sus ancient grass type? How was I supposed to predict that one? What even is that? Now aware of the threat she had in her back pocket, I was able to navigate the rematch with Krabby the Fossil Killer, earning us our very first gym badge. Also, Geodude is boring ugly rock. I just wanted to share that one with the room. We took a nice boat ride over to Dewford, where we got to meet lots of new friends in the local cave, like Clink, the Prime Steel Guys, and Sableye, the Gamer, who has a little bit of an Easter egg attached to it.
Someone just pointed something out. Okay, will you trade?
Oh my god.
Will you move? Yep.
After saying hi and bye to Steven doing who knows what all alone with his cave rocks, we headed off to challenge Brawly. I opened the gym doors and was immediately hit with a wall of pure disgusting stench. Trying not to physically decay, we crawled through the gym's maze and were met by Stink Master Brawly and his smelly ass team. Krabby knocked his Mankey out cold, but Sock came out and started overwhelming my Pokemon one after the other.
Get so much knowledge. Oh my god.
Like, why wouldn't it be?
So you can imagine, I am not happy that this stupid thing is sweeping my team right now. Luckily, the Vulpix I caught earlier was able to tank its hits with its new fluffy type, and together with our own little stinker of a Stunky, we were able to finish the fight. I snatched that badge from Brawly's greasy hand and basically swam to Slateport myself to wash the fumes off my clothes. To dissociate that disgusting experience away, I went and caught myself a new friend. A ground friend, to be specific, as well as a little fluffy Stuffle. We also got to kick out Team Aqua, who was holding the poor Slateport Museum lady hostage with a gun. Thank God they were only armed with a harmless water gun horsey, because I do not want to know what dealing with an actual threatening gun-type Pokemon would even look like. Battling more trainers on the route up to Mauville got me back into the mood to take on the third gym, so I shoved Wally out of the way and headed up to Watson. Things started off normal, but quickly spiraled out of control because after Sableye beat up his Porygon, Watson immediately brought out his ace. You know, his famous star Pokemon, Whimsicott. And this thing just starts spamming its new move called Hype Train. Yep, Watson specializes in Prime-type Pokemon, which would definitely be a funny little hint-hint, nudge-nudge if I was streaming this on Twitch. But alas, here we are. Unfortunately, one cannot gift Prime subs to a YouTube channel. Sadly, all you can do is click the subscribe button. Isn't that just a shame? Well, whether you click the button or not, I got wrecked by this cotton ball. Hype Train works the same as Rollout, where each consecutive use gets stronger and stronger. And this Whimsicott must have had some sort of aimbot on, because it didn't miss a single one. It literally demolished my team the second it stepped onto the battlefield. I was also a bit unprepared and forgot to level everyone up. So let's just forget that fight even happened. Like, it wasn't even fair, so it doesn't count. Round 2 was where the real action was. This battle was much more neck and neck. Knowing what Watson's tactics were going into the fight, I was able to play around it much more easily. Jaden doesn't fall for the same charade more than one time. I'm like an AI learning machine, alright? I never lose the same fight don't look at that. With Watson defeated, I was now one step closer to becoming the strongest trainer in all of this topsy-turvy Hoenn. I caught myself a Honedge, Swablu, and Skarmory while scaling the mountain, and even had time to smack the Team Magma nerds around while heading to Lava Ridge. To avoid another embarrassing underleveled situation, I got everyone up to Flannery's level cap for a nice, clean, fair fight.
That's like, I think the thing that is hardest for me, reading comprehension. I think that's what I've decided. My God!
Oh, wow.
My crabs! Buddy! Holy shit!
Yeah.
What is the downside of this mystic fire? I'm just so weak to fire. And warm hugs. Do I have to wipe to every gym? Flannery.
She's mean.
I don't know what that Ninetales is eating, but that thing is not normal. After changing absolutely nothing about my strategy and just running back into the gym directly from the Pokemon Center, I demanded a rematch. Like, her team of fluffy Pokemon aren't that tough. I just wasn't ready to be paralyzed and incinerated the whole fight by her puppies and kitties and that roided up monster of a Ninetales. This time, Kingler and Sandslash were able to double team Flannery's fluffy team with much more ease, earning us the heat badge. With half the gyms now defeated, it was finally time to deal with some long overdue family matters. It's well known that our father Norman abandoned our home to be a gym leader in Petalburg, leaving me and Mom back at the house alone. Little Root has like 5 people living in it, and one of them's a huge nerd. That's like a social death sentence for a growing child, and I am filled with a burning desire for justice. After all this time, all those days of having nothing to do but watch Birch go into the same stupid patch of grass and get mauled by the same stupid dog over and over and over, I get to walk into Norman's gym and challenge him as an equal. Whatever reasoning he had to leave us is gonna be revealed in our battle. And it better be good. I walked through the doors. The air was weird and tense. Each trainer I battled looked at me like they already knew exactly who I was and shifted their glance away out of embarrassment? Shame? What is going on here? Not even the helpful gym guy had anything to say to me. He wouldn't even tell me the type theme of the gym. I burst through those final doors to find Norman looking out his windows at the horizon. He's been waiting for me.
Are you ready to fight Norman and his very fun and normal gym? Have you not picked up on it yet?
I haven't picked up on anything.
Say, just keep going.
What is he gonna do? What Pokemon do he have? Floatzel? Okay. I don't get it. What is this riddle?
I'm just watching.
Glomp? Is it because he's only using attacks that are cute and family-like?
No.
Lopunny? He can't be a fluffy trainer. That was what Flannery was. Puddle Slam. No, fluffy furry. He said, is he a furry trainer?
Yes.
Norman.
Can't a man have hobbies? Norman.
Look, there's nothing wrong with being a furry. Many of my friends are furries, but to abandon your family to selfishly pursue your passion for Lucarios and Vaporeons and Lopunnies, Norman, how could you? You tore our family apart. And for what? Glomps and colon threes? Admittedly, his team was too strong for me. The bond he shared with those Pokemon was unlike anything I've seen yet, and I was gonna have to go back to the drawing board if I was ever gonna defeat a divorced man and his beloved furries. I switched around some of my Pokemon, headed back in, and again began the onslaught of devastating glomps and cuddle slams, weaving through paralyzing warm hugs and even the occasional cute charm. Eventually, it came down to our last Pokemon.
Okay. Slash.
Oh.
No! Shadow Sneak, please.
You have a chance here.
Please. Yes!
Now that my furry father has been vanquished, I was filled with an overwhelming energy and drive. It was like I unlocked a version of myself that was capable of defeating anyone and everything in front of me. I beat up all of Team Aqua that was infiltrating the Weather Institute, cleared Winona's song and dance gym without breaking a sweat. Maxi stole the blue orb to awaken Groudon like an idiot, so I had to teach him a lesson. Again.
You're gonna use the wrong orb, idiot. Why do you think the blue orb would be good for Groudon? He hates blue!
Team Aqua Rats did the exact same thing, so I had to do the exact same thing to them. I was on a roll. It felt like I was back in my element, finally familiar with the types, and was absolutely thriving. We pulled up to Tate and Liza's gym, ready to let nothing slow us down, except it looks like they specialize in a type I hadn't seen up until this point. Space. Well, time to slow down. Since I didn't have anything that could really handle space Pokemon, I went and caught myself a Bouffalon, because everyone knows Ohio type is good against space. I mean, come on. As well as prepared Sandslash and Stunky for the fight. I wasn't too confident, but made my way to the gym leader's room to find Clay. Where's Tate and Liza? Aren't you supposed to be in Unova? I wasn't anticipating this, but I guess I should just start expecting the unexpected from this game.
It's a double... Okay, it's still a double battle. 41. Oh, we lose. We definitely lose. This isn't space. Wait, what the fuck is going on here? I don't know what's good against gun. How does song? Sure, we'll do that. Shoot! What the? He just shot my Goyle. He shot my guy again. That's so much damage for not very effective. We'll do that. Oh, he's dead. He's just so dead. Bare arms? Oh my god. What is this? Dude, this guy's fighting me with the Constitution.
So this isn't actually a space type gym like I was originally led to believe. This is, in fact, a gun gym, and I am being blasted to Kingdom Come by Mr. Red, White, and Blue over here. I failed to expect this level of unexpected, but how could I? We switched around my team again, this time for a high noon duel battle, headed back in, but honestly, it wasn't looking that great on attempt two of fighting a man with assault weapons.
And air cutter again. No! No! Take it, boys. Take it. Ah! Stop! How can you do this? There's nothing I can do about it. There's fucking nothing. This fight sucks balls. Whatever.
I genuinely think this Clay fight was the most out of left field, chaotic, flabbergasting Pokemon battle I've gone through in my entire career as a Pokemon player. I don't think anything Pokemon could create would ever elicit the kind of shock and despair I felt fighting Clay, the Driftvale gym leader, in my Pokemon Emerald game.
Okay, I don't think this is enough. Yeah, I just... Oh, he went again, sorry. That's so lucky. Oh? Is this it? Yes! Clay, you rootin' tootin' fucking asshole. I'm not talking to you. I'm not talking to you. Get me out of here.
I basically crawl out the gym with my badge like I just got out of a fight with Wile E. Coyote, because I basically did, and... Now I gotta go deal with whatever commotion Team Magma is creating in the space station. Withered and tired, I walk up the stairs to Maxi and Steven arguing about God knows what at this point. Girls, I'm gonna give it to you straight. I'm having a bit of a day. We all know we're just gonna hash this out in a battle, so let's just cut the chit-chat. Steven, get your ass over here. And after all of what I just went through, you guys are not going to believe what Steven put me through in that cursed space center. Yep, so the first fight, I went into it unprepared because I didn't know the team Maxi and Friend were packing. So that was a bit of an unfortunate disadvantage. It's all right, we run it back. But this is where things go drastically downhill.
Hyper voice. Steven, you're just leaving me in the trenches? Why even try at this point? Thunder? Oh my fucking god, Steven, you idiot. Why do they only go against me? Why do they only go against me?
Steven, you are the fucking Elite Four champion of Hoenn. Don't use Thunder on Aggron. It doesn't... It, in no world is it ever good. I swear to God, Steven. You're actually joking.
Steven, you're my guy. I've always had your back. I've been Team Steven since day one. But what in the world was that? This is not the playstyle of the region champion, buddy. Get up. Don't talk to me. I need some air. To blow off some much-needed steam, I infiltrated Team Aqua's hideout because Archie apparently didn't get the memo of my threat of a Knuckle Sandwich if he ever tried to use red on blue Kyogre. Knuckle Sandwich is delivered, but unfortunately, too late. Kyogre is already halfway across the Pacific Ocean to go drown Groudon. Can any of you adults do anything right? Hello? Earth to Archie's brain? It's hollow! I scaled the Sky Tower to wake up Rayquaza and rat on the siblings duking it out in the middle of Sootopolis. Off he flew, and after a bit of non-gentle parenting, the two slinked back in their rooms in shame. Yay! Land and sea across the globe are safe once again. If I catch your asses playing with these f***ing orbs again, I swear. Even though it was the eighth and final gym before taking on the Elite Four, Juan wasn't an issue. For some competitors, he could have been difficult because he actually ran a full-on crab team. Very intimidating. But I've also got a crab. And my crab is stronger than his crabs. So we won. After all I've gone through, this was the hardest I've had to claw my way to the Elite Four in a long time. But that just means victory is gonna taste oh so much sweeter. I entered Victory Road anticipating an easy dungeon clear, but from the shadows emerged Wally. I've beaten you before. I can beat you again. Holy mother! Okay, maybe that one was a bit of a fluke. I wasn't ready. This time, we'll... Turns out, Wally's tough. I didn't expect it, but he really is. This made me realize I'm not prepared for everything with my current roster of Pokemon, and if I'm gonna become the champion, I need to make some big changes. I've been swapping around my team pretty casually over the course of my adventure, but after locking in, I decided on this as my final roster. Primarina, Kingler, Aegislash, Beware, and two new members of Darmanitan, the Angi Fire Monkey, and Duraludon, the, you guessed it, gun. Look, I've seen the power of being able to pull up with a gun. I think I'm gonna need that in the fights that are ahead of me. With these changes, I was able to rematch Wally and take home the win this time. This is it. These guys are my team, and they're the ones I'm gonna become the best with. While doing some final training before the Elite Four, there was just a little tiny, unexpected hiccup along the way.
What was that? Oh my, Freddy, you would never. He would never.
I have to teach it to him.
I'll get rid of Earthquake for Bite of 87. Five Nights? What? What is... What the f-
It's Parish Song.
Oh, Mike, Freddy, what am I turning into? You're not like this, Freddy.
For those of you who are unaware, Five Nights is basically an unhinged version of Parish Song, where after five turns, both Pokemon on the battlefield are hit by a 250 base power attack, and Bite of 87 is straight up a brand new one-hit KO move, where if you get bit, you die instantly. But there's only a 30% chance of it actually connecting. High risk, high reward type move. Equipped with a plethora of new threatening moves and mons, my team was now prepared for the final gauntlet. I flashed my badges to the guards and took a step into Sydney's domain. I like that look you're giving me. Let's have a good match. As someone once taught me, you gotta be prepared for the gun. Phoebe was up next with her gamer Pokemon, and even though I was able to take down her team with my loaded Duraludon and shower-giving Primarina, the highlight of the fight was when she brought out a Freddy Fazbear of her own.
Huge win. Beware. Oh, it's Freddy v. Freddy here. It's gotta be Freddy v. Freddy. And you know what Freddy does.
Oh, he got the first one! He got it!
That's my f***ing Freddy right there. Doesn't miss. He hits that frontal lobe every f***ing time.
I walked into Glacier's room. Larry! The third fight was against Larry, who normally is a gym leader and Elite Four member in Paldea, but looks like he also works for Hoenn. Jeez, man. Three full-time jobs? That cannot be legal. You gotta talk to HR. He led with a golem that only knew Stealth Rocks and Explosion, which is chaotically hilarious. But right after that, he sent out a wall of a slacking that took out my Duraludon, Primarina, and Aegislash. Finally, Kingler was able to knock it out after pulling off a few dragon dances. Sorry, crab raves. Since I basically had a crab bazooka on my hands, Kingler just swept him from there. After the Larry jump scare, I didn't even know what to expect for the final member. It could genuinely be anyone. Cynthia? Red? Clay butt again?
What? No! You're joking! He's in the f***ing vent. No, wait, I'm facing the wrong way.
I didn't know that's what happened when you clicked the vent from that side. I'll be honest.
Not only was I flashed for simply going about my E4 challenge, but Elite Four Sussy Baka and his sus team went dummy mode on me.
I'm scared, so I shoot. Oh, no. Wait, this isn't good. This thing's gotta go. No, he's faster! He's dead. What? I thought... No! Where is he? Ooh, nice crit. No, they all vent! Stop venting.
Well, now I get to get another crab rave.
I do. No! He avoided it! No, Krabby, I'm sorry! Ah!
I was not anticipating a battle where their whole strategy was to hide in vents scattered all over the room, and when they popped out, they hit like trucks. Not even my Five Nights attack could hit them in the vents, which meant I was just getting my own mons attacked by animatronics. Admittedly, we were vaporized. But shut up! There's nothing in the rules about trying again. It's not a Nuzlocke. I refused to call it there because I will not let my legacy end with... Hey, see that girl? She was on her way to become the next Hoenn champion. But she couldn't get past Elite Four member Sussy Baka. Poor thing. The second battle went much better because not only was I able to play around all the venting, but halfway through the fight, Kingler finally learned a better crab move. This whole time, I was being forced to use 50 base power vice grip, but now that we've got 100 base power crab hammer, it was lights out for these imposters. And with that, it was time. All that stood left in front of me was the champion, Wallace. which makes sense because Steven was definitely fired after that maxi fight, out came his first Pokemon, which was a simple Why Not. Now let me explain something here, because this thing is far more threatening than you could ever believe. This game has introduced so many new types into the world of Pokemon. Many of them are extremely powerful, but there's one type that reigns amongst them all, the absolute worst, and that's baby type. It's pretty self-explanatory which Pokemon fall under the baby category. Igglybuff, Cleffa, Budu, Bonsly, literally the baby Pokemon. You know what this type is weak to? Literally like all of them. Think about it. If you hit a baby with anything, they're gonna be taking damage. It's a baby. So now you're probably thinking, okay, so why does the final boss of Hoenn lead with Why Not the baby type? It's also Uno reverse. That's right, every single type effectiveness against this thing is now flipped. It's a defensive monster, just waiting to counter and mirror coat your whole team to death for simply breathing on it too hard. I was genuinely so scared of this thing, I dragon-tailed it out of there. That's a nightmare for another time. His Latias got dragged out, which is crazy to say I was relieved to see compared to that masochist of a Why Not, but of course, it's still a Latias, so it takes out my Duraludon with a single Thunderbolt. Kingler comes out to finish it off, so next came Silvally, which I'll just let you watch how this one played out.
I don't think I'd get past this thing. What even is this type? Type Emerald?
He's a type.
Type. I don't even know what that is, but it's gotta be weak to Monkey.
So, type is more of a modifier than anything. It just doubles all type interactions.
Oh, shit. So okay, so I die here. What?
So, here's a little glitch. Sometimes, let's say the max damage you can deal is 999. If the game registers you as doing more, it overflows into 1 HP.
So, this is Darmanitan died and came back to life, basically.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, that gives us enough time to banana blitz again. Yeah!
We take those, alright? Nope, I don't want to hear it. We take those. The next chunk of the battle plays out pretty normally. Wallace did have some pretty scary Pokemon, including Steven's Metagross, he very likely lost custody of, until I was face to face with this stupid little bomb again. It tried everything it could to bait my Aegislash into attacking it, but we stayed patient. I knew I had a single shot at this, so Aegislash charged up as many swords dances as it could muster before slicing that thing to the moon. A final beast entered the ring. A true abomination called Sans Shedinja. This is the only Pokemon in the Dex with the Sands type, and it can only be touched by a very small selection of types. A tried and true nightmare. Unfortunately for you, Wallace, I've played the genocide route of Undertale. I know exactly what it's gonna take to bury this thing for good. And he's right here. It's a beautiful day, Sans Shedinja. But insects like you should be burning in hell! I did it. The strongest Pokemon trainer in this wacky world of Hoenn is me. It took so much more than I thought it would to be here. Way more humiliating wipes than I'd like to admit. I lost a lot of battles, but shut up! You try playing it then! With the power of friendship, logic, determination, and maybe just a little bit of love, we've beaten Pokemon too many types. When I say I was almost in Squid Game, I specifically mean Netflix's reality show version, not like the actual one where people died. Sorry for a bit of a bait there, but also I'm not lying. So before I get into that whole story, I need to explain how I was even put in that situation to begin with. Early last year, Jacob, our friend Joe, my brother Jax, and I all went to this little Squid Game pop-up event hosted by Netflix. It looked interesting, to say the least. A combination of curiosity and boredom are what convinced us to buy tickets. Our Uber took us to the location provided, and we were dropped off at a scary back alley in the streets of LA. Are you sure this isn't a setup for, you know, the real thing? We hunted down the entrance, headed up Squid Game-themed stairs, and inside was a big lobby with merch, snacks, decorations. You know what else was in there? No other human beings. We were the only ones there, along with the shape guys that were just staring at us. Are you sure this isn't— I don't know anymore! Staff signed us in and gave us numbered wristbands. What? It's like Squid Game! Eventually, more contestants showed up, and soon enough, we were herded into the starting room, decorated very much like no one actually cared about this thing. And if they did, corporate ruined it. The staff guy gave us the rundown on how the event was gonna work, all the rules, such and such, but sprinkled throughout the explanation were, like, a lot of safety hazard jokes. I know the concept of the whole thing is rooted in playing dangerous games and dying and ooh, evil dystopian, but he was saying things like, don't lean on the walls, you might rip through it, and I don't want to fill out any paperwork if you hurt yourself. Don't touch anything that you shouldn't touch. I don't want to have to fill out paperwork again. He was very anti-paperwork, like way more than the actual human safety part. Based on what we've seen so far, our group knew we were about to experience exactly what we were hoping for, but with not the death part. For the first game, we were led into a room with lines of glass squares. What? It's like Squid Game again! The glass jumping part! When it was your turn, the pattern on the 10 squares would be shown, and you needed to memorize which tiles to step on. It's like, well, I guess it's kind of like Squid Game. Kinda. Eh. The first batch of people stepped up, the patterns all flashed, but before anyone could begin stepping on glass, they were instructed to hold it and only take one step at a time. For the whole game, we had to watch everyone take one individual step, stop, wait to be confirmed, then take one more step. For 10 spaces, in like 6 groups total. Also, I think that whatever mechanism they used to track if people were out or not was super busted, because literally only like 5 people in total got their pattern right. Joe, Jacob, and Jax all swore they memorized their pattern correctly, but were eliminated anyway. I know I botched mine up though. I've got paper shredder brain. They could give me one tile to memorize and I would still forget it. 25 of the 30 people failed their very first puzzle. Now, Netflix knew that if people paid $40, yeah, 40, to be in this shitty little Squid Game event, and then had to go home after the first game, they would be pretty upset. So the rule was, for the first 4 challenges, no one would be eliminated. Yay, woohoo, phew, that was a close one. In the next room, they tried to combine both the honeycomb game and the marbles game from the show, but what was put together was, throw marbles in the shape on the table to win other people's marbles. It was very anticlimactic. Unfortunately, we were only able to gather in groups of 3, so Joe wasn't able to join us. Instead, he was paired up as a third wheel to a random couple that was obviously here on a date. Jax cleaned up shop on us, he got all our marbles within minutes. But over at Joe's table, malicious injustice was afoot. Apparently, the 2 people that were in a romantic relationship ganged up on Joe, and after taking all his marbles, just split them up between each other. Despite there being no actual stakes in the game, Joe was furious simply out of principle and swore to get revenge on them somewhere, somehow. Before he could even start any beef, we were brought into the next room, and again, we're split into groups, this time of 4. They really liked group activities in this thing. Walking through the doors to the challenge, everyone was stationed around a respective gift coffin. After opening them up, it was revealed we were going to be playing a big version of Operation, the game where you try to pick up fake little organs with fake medical tools without touching the sides. So, simulated surgery. Like, I guess that was kinda in Squid Game. At least they decorated the boxes like it, but I mean, we're really pushing it at this point.
Jacob and I randomly got paired up with this married couple, and the four of us started inspecting the tools, when suddenly, the woman goes, "Oh, will you pass me the forceps?" She's a surgeon. Oh my god, we just happened to be paired up with a lady whose literal job was operation. The challenge began and the three of us took our hands off the tools, she cracked her knuckles, and we watched as all the plastic organs were suddenly out of the prop body. Not surprisingly, our team was the first to finish. When we got back together with Joe and Jax, we explained how we got super lucky to be paired up with an actual surgeon that literally soloed the whole thing, and Joe was like, "Wait, that guy was a surgeon?" And Jacob and I had to shake our heads and say, "No, Joe, she was a surgeon." Damn it. Now that we were entering the fourth challenge, it was time to get serious. This was the first game where people would start getting eliminated for realsies. But not realsies. Everyone was split into two groups and taken to one side of a wall where there was a bunch of prop boats. It was a kind of not really IRL version of Battleship where we had to try and shoot down all the other side's boats and the team that won would progress into the fifth game. I would describe this idea as good enough. Sure, you know, we didn't get to choose where to put our boats since they were bolted to the floor, but I guess we did only pay $40 to be here. For some reason though, the staff member on our side was, we can call it, extremely helpful. At first he was saying general tips, like, "So if they still have a four-tile boat, let's check all the areas that could fit that." You know, saying vague hints to help us out a bit. But by the end of it, he was just straight up telling us, "If I were you guys, I would shoot right here." Like, this guy wanted us to win, and win fast, so either he had some kind of bet going on with the other staff members, or dude just had places to be. All the other team's boats were sunk, and the remaining 15 or so people were led into the semi-final game. It was obvious as soon as we saw her, we were finally playing the classic red light, green light. It was decorated like the show, the doll was there, but there were giant gift boxes scattered around the room to act as obstacles, because when you think about it, red light, green light isn't high stakes when staff can't actually shoot the contestants. Like, something had to be added to spice it up a bit. We gathered on the starting line, and the game started. As we were playing, I was thinking, how are they measuring if we're moving or not? You know, I doubt they recreated the entire motion tracking doll thing just for this pop-up that's getting torn down after a month. I figured the only thing they could be using to track motion is our wristband, so in between the green lights, I focused extra hard on making sure my wrist stayed as still as possible. In fact, I was focusing so hard on my wrist that I didn't even realize I was the first one to pass the finish line. Unfortunately, similarly to the janky glass memory game, it seemed like a lot of the wristbands were super wonky as well because a lot of people got pinged as eliminated no matter how still they were, including Jacob and Jax, which was a huge buzzkill. Either that or they were just built to be super sensitive and somehow my weak little carpal tunnel wrists decided to not shake for the first time in 5 years. I turned back to see just three people left, one of them being Joe. They all lunged forward, and as red light was called for the final time, I watched as Joe tripped and crashed into them, causing every person left to topple to the floor. Their wristbands deemed them eliminated. As Joe was walking past me to the dead area, I asked what happened, to which he said, "I got him." Joe had intentionally sacrificed himself to bump those people because they were the couple that ganged up on him during Marbles. He had finally gotten his revenge. Was it petty? Yes. Did he probably ruin their date? Yes. But do I also not care and think that was the funniest shit ever? Absolutely, Joe is awesome. I was somehow the only one in our group moving on to the final round. Me and the other four winners of Red Light, Green Light were brought into Squid Game. And everyone else was there too, watching from behind a little rope. "Jaden, Squid Game is so rough and tough. How did you fare against the four other dudes that made it to the end? In real Squid Game, the guy got stabbed. Did you get stabbed?" you're probably wondering. And oh, dear viewer, no, I did not get stabbed. In fact, I didn't get hurt at all, because Netflix didn't want to deal with paperwork. Instead, we played hold a fake egg on a spoon and attack each other until there's one egg standing, but attack in a way where there's no paperwork. Which is fine with me, because I doubt any of us actually knew how to play Squid Game anyway. The buzzer rang, and everyone started shifting around in the shape. Since I, for some reason, have experience in high-stakes game tournaments, I deployed my signature strategy of don't bring attention to myself. I simply dodged and weaved between the guys swiping at each other's eggs. I can take someone on in a 1v1, but any number higher, and I've gone well past my capabilities. Eventually, there were just 3 people left. The crowd started yelling, "Get the girl! The girl's still in!" And the 2 guys started walking towards me. But then my personal peanut gallery chimed in with, "Hey, hey, hey! They're ganging up on the girl! Boo! Shame! Boo!" And that flustered them enough to back away again. Apparently, the power of teamwork and fear of misogyny can persevere through anything. Suddenly, an egg hit the floor. It was just me and non-woman-hating guy number 2. The exact 1v1 I was trying to create. We circled each other, both our spoon-holding arms stretched out as far as they could go. He swung at my egg a couple times and I managed to dodge. But I couldn't win this thing if I didn't go on the offense. Wait, what if I just... I won the silly little Netflix Squid Game pop-up. The front man came out and escorted me to the VIP area where he gave me a plastic animal mask, like in Squid Game. And we took awesome photos together, and I got an awesome t-shirt that said WINNER! And I didn't know it at the time, but as this was happening, the staff pretended to shoot all the losers with fake gun sounds. Unfortunately, I didn't get the 45.6 billion money prize like in the show. But along with the t-shirt, they did give me a special form to fill out that would give me priority application for Netflix's actual Squid Game reality show. Squid Game The Challenge, Season 2. I looked at the form and thought, you know, we'll just see what happens. Filled it out and was able to bring my friends back to the VIP room with me, because winning isn't fun unless you do it with your friends. That's what Squid Game taught me. There were a bunch of snacks and alcoholic beverages in the winner area, and I gotta say, the alcoholic squid drinks were probably the worst things I've ever tasted. It was astonishing how bad they were. Over a year later, and I can still imagine it. I don't even know what ingredient could do that to a drink. Anyway, after I submitted my form, I half expected to never hear anything about it ever again. But to my surprise, Netflix reached out to interview me about potentially being a contestant on the show. In fact, I was forwarded to the next round of interviews 3 times to completely break any potential rules of confidentiality. I was starting to think there might be a chance I could actually be on the show. But eventually, the interviews came to a stop, and I have come to the conclusion they have moved on to better qualifying people. Most likely because, I will admit, I was a bit too honest during the interviews. They basically all just looked like this. What kind of a role do you think you would play in Squid Game as a contestant?